We are continuing today in our Titus series. Last week we took a bit of a break. We had a special guest speaker named Dave Wells, who spoke on the importance, the priority really, and the urgency of our mission as the church to reach those who are lost, those who are hurting, those who are lonely, those who don't know Jesus, essentially. And it ended up actually fitting quite well into our theme for our series this over the next few weeks. Our theme is living with purpose, life driven by purpose. And if there's no, I mean, really, there's no greater purpose than to go and to be, to go and make disciples. That is our mission as the church, and it's the purpose that we live with. Mark introduced this series 2 weeks back by talking about the priesthood of all believers, the priesthood of all believers. Now, that's kind of a fancy term, but essentially what it means is that through Jesus, we are able to have direct access to God. We don't need a middleman anymore. We have direct access to God. But along with that direct access, that immediate access to God, it also comes with a responsibility. A responsibility to influence people for Christ, to influence people for good, to do good in this world, to be salt and light in our communities. It comes with that responsibility. And while he talked a lot about the fact that all of us have influence, all of us have influence. Think about it. You have influence in your home. You have influence in your schools. You have influence in your workplaces, whether it's McDonald's or whether it's KPMG. You have influence wherever you go. But what's not often talked about, and no, the thing that nobody writes books on, is the fact that it's also possible, and in fact, it's very easy for us to lose our influence. Nobody wants to write books about that, right? Nobody wants to talk about how to be an uninfluential person. But it is very possible and very easy for us to lose our influence, and that's actually going to be our focus today. We've all heard stories, have we not, about people who have lost their influence and lost their credibility with others. We've all heard the stories. All you have to do is search CNN or go on Facebook, and you'll see stories of people who lose their influence, they lose their credibility, they lose opportunities because of things that have come out, stories that have come out, right? Like, I mean, one day it seems like, you know, this person has a lot of influence, they have a lot of position and power and titles, they have a lot of pull in a lot of areas, and then the stories come out. They've lied, they've cheated, they've spoken or acted inappropriately, and all of a sudden, all of the other stuff is washed away. All of the other stuff is gone. And all of a sudden, it seems like they're a completely different person than they were yesterday. It seems to happen really, really quickly. It seems to happen that way. But it's actually not. The loss of influence is like a pot of water that you leave unattended on the stove, right? You put a pot of water on the stove, maybe you're making KD, you're making macaroni and cheese, I don't know, and you turn your back on it, and all of a sudden, it seems like it's starting to boil over. It's making a lot of angry noises at you, and it seems to be boiling over, right? Like, we've all had that moment where it's like you turn your back, and it's like, whoa, what happened? It seems to happen really quickly, but the reality is that the water had been simmering under the lid for a very long time before it actually got to the point of boiling over, right? You just weren't paying attention. It was simmering under the lid for a long time. It seems quick, but it is not. And the loss of influence is a lot like this, because the loss of influence is the result. It's the boiling point, the spilling over of something that is simmering under the surface for a very, very long time. All we see is the boiling over. That's something that has been simmering for a very long time is a lack of integrity. Integrity is defined as the quality of being honest and having strong moral principles. I actually like this definition better. It's being whole and undivided. Basically, it's being who you say you are. being who you say you are. Integrity makes or breaks influence, because no matter how gifted you are, no matter how talented you are, no matter how likable you are, no matter how charismatic you are, influence without integrity never lasts, because you are not who you say you are. Doesn't matter what it looks like on the surface, it's what's boiling over that matters. And that's what our passage today talks about. In our passage today, Paul is talking about those who shouldn't have influence. In fact, they should have it taken away from them because of a lack of integrity. And so what we're going to look at today is what influence without integrity looks like. We're going to paint a picture. Well, Paul paints the picture for us of what someone who is not worth following looks like. And as we do that, we are going to look at where they went wrong. And we are going to look at ourselves and figure out what we can avoid, how we can avoid those same problems, or how we can fix them. So turn with me, if you have your Bibles, to Titus chapter 1, verses 10 to 13. So this is Paul writing to the church in Crete at the time. For there are many who are insubordinate, empty talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision party. They must be silenced, for they are upsetting whole families by teaching for shameful gain what they ought not to teach. One of the Cretans, a prophet of their own, said, "Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons." This testimony is true. So right away we see some characteristics, right, of things that should not define Jesus' followers. These are things that should not define people who call themselves Christians. They are disobedient, they are selfish, they are dishonest, and they start conflict from out of nowhere. They're divisive. Thanks. And what we can observe right away is that someone not worth following, someone who is not worth following, usually has character that is compromised. Their character is usually compromised because their attitudes and their motives spill over into their actions and their speech. Their attitudes and their motives spill over. And what happens is it's not only harmful to themselves, it's harmful to the people around them, right? And here's the thing about compromised character. Compromised character is usually not obvious right away. Has anyone here ever had food poisoning? Oh my goodness. If you had food poisoning, like, you remember, right? Because I remember, it's burned in my brain. That 24 hours, I will never forget that. I was at a restaurant with my family. It was my whole extended family. We'd gone to this restaurant like at least 10 times before. Never been an issue. And we're at this dinner. Nothing looks off. That's the thing. Nothing looks off. Nothing looks wrong. Everything looks normal. Everything looks fine. It's 24 hours later that you realize just how bad it was, just how off it was, right? And compromised character is like this. Their character can look great in the moment. It can look amazing when they're talking to you. It can look fantastic from the outside. But it's only later on that you realize how much dysfunction, how much discord, and how much toxicity that it produces. What's interesting is Paul's words, actually, right in this verse. Paul's words seem to imply that this is just who they are, right? Well, you know those Cretans. Those Cretans, they say it themselves, you know, they're always liars, they're always evil beasts, they're always lazy gluttons, they're always like this. You know these people, this is just what they're like. This is what his words seem to imply, right? And sometimes we do this too, right? Like sometimes we say some variation of the same thing. Well, you know, teenagers, they're always like this, dot, dot, dot. Well, you know, seniors, right? They're always like this, dot, dot, dot. Well, you know, conservatives, like, they're always like, dot, dot, dot. You know, liberals, they're always dot, dot, dot. You know, men, dot, dot, dot. You know, women, dot, dot. You know. They're always like, dot, dot, dot. We do this. If that does not sound like something the Bible would or Paul would give you permission to do, that's because you're right. He's not giving us permission to do that. He's saying something different. He's not painting them all with the same brush. In fact, there were many Christians in Crete that were not like this. The reason we know that is because if everybody were like that, there would be no one to take advantage of, right? Like, if everybody is like this, nobody's getting cheated. They're all just, who are they going to cheat? They're not all like this. Paul knows this. What he is saying is this is what the culture is like. This is what the surrounding culture around the church is like, and they know it. This is what it's like. You know what Crete, how well-known Crete was for being dishonest? You know how we say when we tell someone to search something, we're like, oh, go Google it? Well, in this time, in Paul's time, if you were to lie or to cheat or to swindle someone, they would say you Creted it, you Cretized it. They became a slang word for cheating and lying and being dishonest. That's how well known they were for being cheaters and liars. That's how well known they were. That's the culture that the church finds themselves in. And this, and what Paul is saying is they have allowed culture to shape their character rather than the other way around. Crete rubbed off on the Christians, not the other way around. And what we observe from that is that influence without integrity follows culture, not Christ. Influence without integrity looks a lot like the people around them. In fact, it looks no different. Looks no different on the inside. No matter how much Christianese they say, no matter how many Christian words they know, no matter how much doctrine they know, the character follows culture and not Christ. Here's the rub, though. Here's the rub. If the measure of someone who is not worth following is on how much their character looks like culture and not Christ, then in some ways, all of us fit that bill. Right? It has been very easy this entire time that I have been talking to say, yeah, down with fake Christians. Down with fake leaders. Down with hypocrites. Very easy to do that. It is much harder to look in the mirror, take the plank out of our own eye, and say, yeah, if the measure of someone who is not worth following is someone who imitates culture and not Christ, then in some ways I do fit that bill. In more ways than I'm willing to admit, I fit that bill. Because when we are passive-aggressive, when we hold grudges, when we are prideful, that is culture in us, not Christ. When we are manipulative, when we are dishonest, even a little bit, when we believe that the ends justify the means, then that is culture in us, not Christ. There are so many things in us that we like to cover with Christian words and Christian doctrine and Christian sayings. There are so many things that we do that are just a cover for cultural tendencies, practices, and biases. They're not actually from Christ. There are a lot of things about us that are so very unchrist-like, but are so very like the cultures that we grew up in, the family that we were raised in, the cultures that we are surrounded by at work and in our schools and on Instagram, the cultures that we find ourselves living, breathing, and working in right now. That's the reality. That's the reality. Influence without integrity follows culture, not Christ. But the good news is, as we keep reading, that it can be restored. Let's read on. Therefore, rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith, not devoting themselves to Jewish myths and the commands of people who turn away from the truth. To the pure, all things are pure, but to the defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. But both their minds and their consciences are defiled. They profess to know God, but deny him by their works. They are detestable, disobedient, unfit for any good work. Correction, or what Paul says is a rebuke. Correction is meant to be restorative. It is not meant to humiliate someone. It's not meant to get them back for something that they've said or done. It's not meant to make us feel guilty and bad and like we are inherently bad people. That's not what correction is about. Correction done right is restorative. It's intended to turn us back to healthy faith and to holy character. It's intended to turn our attention back towards God. Because as Paul puts it, and this is kind of what he means by to the pure, all things are pure, to the defiled, blah, blah, blah. This is what he means by this. He means that when our attention is back on the things of God, when our attention is back on the ways of God, then it makes it much easier for us to make decisions, to make choices that honor God. I mean, it seems like almost too simple, right? It seems almost too simple, but I feel stupid even saying this, honestly. But when our attention is back on Jesus, it makes being like Jesus much easier, right? When our attention is back on Jesus, it makes being like Jesus much easier. When our attention is on who's in power in the government, when our attention is on inflammatory Facebook posts, misinformation, when our attention is on what someone said to us 20 years ago that we still haven't gotten over, when our attention is on the things that are happening, the changes that we don't like, it is not as easy to focus on being like Jesus because we're not actually looking at Jesus. When our attention is back on Jesus, it makes being like Jesus much, much easier. So how can we be restored to have influence with integrity? What does influence with integrity look like? There's a lot of things. I want to say that influence with integrity doesn't mean that you have to be perfect. It doesn't mean that you're flawless. It doesn't mean that you never make mistakes, you never say the wrong thing. It's not about that. Influence with integrity rather looks like this. It means making three commitments that make us someone worth following. Three commitments. The first one is humility. Humility. Consider these the antidote to all the things that Paul is saying here in Titus. Humility is the first one, humility. When Jesus had one day left on earth, what did he do? Did he go out and party and live it up one last time to enjoy the last of his time? No, actually, he washed feet. He washed feet. How many of us make that the activity of our choice when it's our last, if we knew it was the last day, our last day on earth, right? He washed feet. Humility looks like that. Humility looks like the purposes of God being more important, outweighing our own agendas and our own priorities and our own motives. It looks like looking out for the best interest of other people, even when it is of no advantage to you. Even when it is of no advantage to you, even when it's actually going to be inconvenient to you, it means looking out for the best interest of other people. It looks like sharing credit for success, especially group projects, because we all know how much everybody feels like they work all on their own for group projects, right? Especially on group projects. Come on, college students. looks like sharing credit for success. It looks like asking for help with your marriage, with your kids, with work. It looks like unclogging toilets and stacking chairs, even though nobody asked you to. Humility is not very glamorous, right? But it is impressive, and it is the marker of someone worth following. The second commitment is honesty. Honesty. How many people have lied on a resume? Come on. Come on, seriously? Okay, I'll tell you mine. I put on my resume way back in the day that I was fluent in Cantonese because I spoke Cantonese at home. Knowing how to ask for something to eat is fluent, right? I put fluent in Cantonese. And this past summer, I went to Hong Kong, and I was reminded very much so that I am not fluent in Cantonese. Be real about what you can do and what you can't do. Be real about what you can handle and what you can't handle. Be real about what you struggle with and what you don't struggle with. Be real with yourself and with other people. Be real about all that stuff. And don't get me wrong, you know, we don't want a false sense of humility because we need to be honest about where we're at, because none of us are so perfect that everybody else is to blame and nothing needs to change about us, right? Nobody is that perfect. It's also true that nobody is so flawed or so full of failure that God can't use them. So if that's a lie you're telling yourself, be honest with yourself. Be honest about God and what God can do with you. Be honest, be real. The third commitment is honor. And I think this is the one we struggle with the most, honor. Paul writes in Romans that we need to outdo one another in showing honor. Outdo one another in showing honor. And the great thing is that you already know how to do this. Nobody needs to teach you how to do this, okay? I heard somebody once give a description on what it looks like to show honor, and they described it like this. What would you do if you were going to dinner with somebody that you admired and you had respected for years? Okay, think about one person. Think about somebody, maybe famous, maybe not, whatever. Somebody that you respected and admired for years. And you had the chance to go for dinner with them. What would you do? Well, you would probably show up, first of all. You'd show up, probably be on time, you know. You would be, you know, prepared to tell them what you love about them, what you think is amazing about them, all the things that you admire about them, all the good qualities you see in them. You'd be on your best behavior your whole night, wouldn't you? You would be. And if that person showed up late, even 10, 15 minutes, and they apologized, what would you say? You would say, no, 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 don't apologize. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for making time for me. Thank you, Steph Curry. Thank you, Michelle Obama. Thank you for taking time. The honor is all mine. The honor is all mine. Honor is recognizing and responding to the value of the person in front of you. Recognizing and responding to the value of the person in front of you. Now, let me ask you, how long has it been since you were treated that way? How long has it been since you treated someone else that way? Jesus lived for 33 years. Of those 33 years, well, I mean, he's alive now, but you know what I mean, 33 years on earth. Of those 33 years, 3 years were spent teaching, speaking, and traveling with followers. Only 3 years, 1/11th of his life. But his influence changed history, changed our understanding of humanity, and it left behind a legacy that we're all a part of right now, sitting here in this room. Jesus was the ultimate person worth following. His character was of the highest quality. He changed culture instead of the other way around. He was humble, he was honest, and he honored other people in radical ways. And the incredible thing is that as God on the cross, he made it possible for us to become someone's worth following to by the cross. Nobody goes into a marriage thinking to themselves that they want to alienate their spouse 15 years down the road. Nobody starts a family thinking that one day they are either going to hurt or be hurt by the people that they choose to bring into that family. Nobody as a teenager imagines a future where they don't speak to their parents for 30 years. Nobody as a parent imagines a future where they don't speak to their kids for however many years and don't see their grandkids. Nobody, nobody, nobody wants that. But perhaps you find yourself there anyway. Perhaps you find yourself in a place where you've lost your influence with the people that are closest to you, the people that are most important to you. Perhaps you found yourself there a long time ago and you actually gave up. And you said, well, what's the point? What's the point of trying? And I believe that what God would say to you today through the life of Jesus is that it's not too late to try again. It's not too late to try again, but this time, try it Jesus's way. Try humility. Try honesty. Try honor. And try asking him to show you how to do that. Try asking him what that would look like in your own life. Try laying your mistakes and your failures down at the cross. Try laying those down and leaving those behind for him to deal with. Try following the one who is worth following, because he can transform you into someone that is worth following too. And how amazing would it be if every single one of us in this room were people who are worth following? Wouldn't that be incredible? Let's pray.